the red light.
You guys ready?
Okay.
Well, it's collective bargaining. Today is what, May 28th? Is that right?
29th.
Okay. Between University of West Florida Board of Trustees and United Faculty of Florida, University of West Florida Chapter, John Fink, Daniel Pace,
Remy Goujon,
Dan Lucas,
Mike Benaborg,
Chrisandra Nash,
John LaFrith,
Scott Satterway,
Dean DeBoat.
Okay. We have proposals for everything that's on the table right now, response proposals. Before we pass those out, just a couple of quick contextual items, I think, based on some of the things that we've been discussing. It'll just take a second. One of the things we've been talking a lot about, we think we have a path forward on everything on the table. I don't know if you all would agree, we see the central point that's hanging us up on moving forward is this relationship between the multi-year contracts and the teaching award structure for instructors and lecturers, of seeing those as one, the removal is one is contingent on putting forward the material of the other. We went back, one of the points of discussion that we've had a few times at the table is about what was the original intent of those multi-year contracts. Were they intended to be temporary and replaced, or are they independent from the proposals that we're talking about now? So we went back and reviewed the tapes on those from 13-14 in all of the contexts that we talked about. It certainly that we found they were discussed in the context of meritorious for high-performing faculty. We couldn't find any evidence that they were intended to be temporary in that language. Additionally, we believe that the language of the contract reflects that. And we went back, this is just one copy of, at the conclusion of the 2013-14 contract, the university sent out a joint statement between UFF and UWF. This is from the president's email account. In the description of the multi-year contracts for instructors, lecturers, research associates, and library faculty, it says explicitly they're for high-performing instructors and lecturers, right? That's been our position throughout, that they are designed to be meritorious and to reward that faculty, right? So that's some of the context we went back and reviewed based on that conversation. Secondarily, following our previous meeting, we sent a survey to faculty who are affected by who would be invested in the introduction of the teaching award structure. And we asked them explicitly one question, and it was, if you had to choose between retaining the current multi-year contract structure with potential $1,000 increases every 6 years, or losing the multi-year contract structure in exchange for a teaching award application system that would provide a potential $4,000 increase to base salary on a 6-year basis, minimum 2 of the teaching awards available in your career, possibly more, which program would you prefer? Right, we had about a 50% response rate over Labor Day week, Memorial Day weekend. It's pretty good out of 100 and so many faculty who would be affected. By a 2-to-1 ratio, they said keeping the current multi-year contract structure over a proposed teaching award system with the loss of the multi-year contract system. Right, so they've made that. You know, those constituents have made that pretty clear that if giving up the multi-year contract, if the teaching award is contingent on giving up that contract, they prefer status quo.
Okay.
You know, so that's the context that we've tried to provide today before putting these things forward. Okay. And it should all be organized. We provided a summary on all of the items here on the front. They should be in order. The Article 3 is unchanged. That's what we had previously discussed, striking the either or. On Article 9, we took the language that you all distributed, and we went through, and we have proposed the removing of the money component of the multi-year contracts, of the $1,000, but retaining the structure as it currently exists. Other changes that we made in the defining of the college councils that would review the award that you put forward, we removed just the language about it being a majority of tenure track faculty who serve on that committee. One of the things that we, in our research of looking at these items, it's you usually, you don't want to have a majority of tenure track faculty reviewing non-tenure track faculty in these review scenarios, because there tends to be bias that's introduced based on their different employment positions, right? So we haven't defined it one way or the other of like what the composition of that committee would be. We've just removed the qualification that it would be a majority of tenure track faculty. So it just says it's composed of tenure track and non-tenure track faculty. We have clarified that the awards will be offered annually and that no cap will be placed on the number of available awards in a review cycle, right? To make sure that we have discussed that at the table recently, but we also wanted to make sure that that's reflected in the language. Probably the major component that we did, this year I served as the chair of the Faculty Excellence in Teaching Award Committee. That's our annual university-wide teaching award. And it's really helpful when you roll out these programs to differentiate the application material from the criteria for review. We felt that then the way in which it was submitted previously, that it kind of conflated those two elements of the review criteria and the application portfolio. So we've differentiated those items here. You can see them in 3A. It says the application portfolio materials will include at a minimum, and then it's just the statement of contribution, you know, all of those things, up-to-date curriculum vitae. And then this evaluation criteria will include at a minimum things like the evidence the candidate has demonstrated distinguished performance in relation to teaching requirements, et cetera, et cetera. Much of this criteria language is taken from our current Faculty Excellence in Teaching Award. When we were evaluating those teaching portfolios this year, this seemed to be like a really good set of criteria that was applicable to a wide range of different fields, right? Different structures. So we've, but the basic structure of the College Council defining those elements is unchanged. We've just differentiated those elements. We've clarified that any changes by the College Council to the criteria that needs to be available at least 1 month before the application deadline, right? That's pretty standard. We have removed the two award maximum over career, but clarified no more than one award over any consecutive 6-year period. This puts it in line with the structure of the SPE system that we currently have, that faculty can receive that every 6 years, right? And then we defined the rollout schedule, just filling in numbers for the blanks that you guys included in there, right? So those are the, all the other language is the same. A couple questions that I had to ask for clarification on that. We currently have college councils, one per college, right? We have the College of Business Council, the College of Arts and Sciences Council, et cetera, et cetera. I was unclear from the intent. My assumption is that this would be a college council created expressly for the purpose of reviewing these awards, right? That it would not be a duty of the currently composed college councils. That's the assumption that I had here, but I just wanted to make sure and get clarity on that. I thought it was just an overlap of language.
Okay. I'm not sure what the answer is to that question.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either. That's why.
Yeah.
The other questions, the language at the beginning about eligibility, it says, let's see. It says, so just in G, what is now G, it was F previously, the Outstanding Teaching Award. So it's for eligibility, it says all non-tenure line in-unit faculty, including instructors, research associates, and scholars, and clinical, right, here and referred to as candidate. That seemed potentially contradictory, right? It says all of the non-tenure line in-unit faculty and then defines those specific positions, right? So, for example, is the intent of the university to include library faculty in that because they are non-tenure line in-unit faculty? You know, our discussions have been that library faculty already have access to the SPE and promotion system, but that was potentially unclear by defining it as all non-tenure line faculty and then identifying the specific positions that follow it. The other question about 9 that we had was, in the proposal you all put forward, there was a couple of kind of just catch-all phrases, right? It said replacing the entirety of 9.4F, right? Within 9.4F, we have the previously ratified language about the raise that's going out August 8th, right, here in a couple of months. I assumed that that was potentially just an oversight when it was put forward, that it wasn't intended. Okay, that's what I figured. So it's still the position of the university that raise would be distributed, right? Okay, good. And also it would, the language that was put forward in that scenario said, if you struck the entirety of 9.4F, it would remove the entire concept of multi-year contracts, not just these...
My understanding of the intent was that it was just to replace the evaluation program with the multi-year contracts that stack.
Right. The ones that we previously negotiated. Right.
That's everything else about that section was not intended to be.
Okay. Because it also included language saying. Anywhere it's referenced in the contract, right?
Yeah.
You know.
When I gave it to you yesterday, I noticed that. I think we might be sweeping a little
out of here. Yeah, we'd like to strike anywhere that mentions disciplinary action in the contract. we'll strike it now and look it up later, right? I assumed all those were oversight components. Yes. Thank you for providing clarity on that.
The term multi-year contract is forbidden.
Exactly. Or just referencing multi-years. Those were our proposal on 9. For 25 on salaries, I think we're actually really close on this. We have the only changes that we've made here are.
Can I stop for a second?
Yeah, of course, please.
Just in case anybody has a question.
Question.
But I'm also looking at your. We had two of these $4,000 events in a career.
Yes.
And. What you're suggesting is every 6 years, no matter how often 6 years comes around over person's career.
Yes, just like the SPE system, right? Like you come up every 6 years.
And the other thing it says, you say defined rollout schedule. How is your rollout schedule defined differently than what we did?
We've just, it's a 3-year rollout schedule. We've just applied the dates into it. They were left in blanks.
That's true. We left the blanks.
Yeah, so we've just provided dates, but it maintained a 3-year rollout schedule. One other question for clarification. The language that you all had proposed, which we've retained in here, says that it's every 6 years and then every 6 years thereafter, right? So the implication, as I understood that, is that the candidate would have to go up in that 6 year, and if they didn't go up, they would have to wait 6 years, right? Or was your intention that at any point they decided to go up, they would look back at the previous 6 years.
I think we intended it to be when your sixth year came up, you have to apply or not apply.
Okay.
You can't then just roll it forward to 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Because I think one of the things we're trying to do is to spread these out so that the cost is there's a smoothing.
I think that's totally understandable. I just wanted to make sure that was clear. That was the assumption that I thought in the language. So your proposal right now is if someone elected not to go up for the award during that window, they would have to wait for the next 6 years to go up.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Any other questions about?
No, anybody else? Have
language in 9.
Okay.
No. Okay. So in 25, we have retained the non-recurring wage action, right? The bonus. The only difference is that you guys had previously proposed a specific date that would be distributed on. The language that we used last time was basically 2 weeks after ratification, right? And so that's the same language that we have in here now, right? So depending upon when we're able to get everything ratified. The salary increase is, again, sort of unchanged for next year. What we have added in is rolling forward the cost of living increase into the next contract as well. What we've done previously of looking ahead for 1 year for budgeting purposes. And the only other thing we have added in is the final 1% in 25.5 to make those faculty whole. This would be distributed in August 8th, 2019. If you guys remember a few years ago, we increased the associate promotion increase from 9% to 4%, or not, excuse me, 9% to 13%, an increase of 4%. And so we've working towards recapturing that for the people who, to making them whole who previously received 9%. So we've distributed we have 3% of that that has been accounted for. This would just be the final 4% that would go out. But those are the only changes that we've made to the salary article. Any questions on salary?
Questions on salary?
In the area in Article 25 to
yeah.
C, where you're changing the dates, explain what the strike through and what the impact is.
These are here on, do you mean on the entire 25.2?
Just on C1.
Yes, C1. So that 8 is supposed to be underlined. It's not supposed to be simultaneously struck
changing
through.
Changing 7 and 8.
Yeah, the 7 is changed 7, 2, and 8. These are... this is kind of the standard boilerplate language about when they must have been employed in order to receive that wage action, right? So usually you have to usually be employed, I think, like an academic year or so before you're eligible for like a bonus or a raise. So it's keeping that in line with the standard eligibility timeline that we have for bonuses and raises. So, for example, if someone's hired, if they start August, right, and then this bonus goes out August 8th, they've been on the job 8 days, they're not eligible for that bonus.
Right? Interesting.
Yeah. And our intent in that is just to make it, you know, the same standard that we've used, you know, previously. For phased retirement, the you all have previously said that you would the university would be willing to raise the 63 to 65, right? And we have done that. We've talked about language to point us back to the state requirements for the re-enrollment period. We've provided draft language for that. Simply, reemployment for faculty participating in the phased retirement program will be in accordance with the provisions of state law, right? If there's other changes or amendments to that you guys would like to make, that's fine. We're just directing that back to the state law. In addition to that, the only other thing that we've added is we've attached an MOU, which you know, we believe, we think it's great that we're increasing this to 65, especially because that's when you start to trigger Medicare and other things, right? There's a distinct population at the university who are older than that right now who would very much like to participate in phased retirement. We think that has benefits both to the faculty and to the university, right? So what we have proposed is essentially creating a one-year buyout for 2019 in an MOU. And that MOU says anyone 66 or over can participate in phased retirement only for that one-year window of 2019. And only to a maximum of 2 years of additional employment. Like, they couldn't take the full 5 years. But it creates essentially a buyout for those faculty. If they want to transition to phased retirement with a 2-year window, it would give them that opportunity.
So somebody who missed the 63 date, but they're now 64, 65, or 66.
Well, no,
they
need the cash. Anyone. Like, if someone is 73, right, and they say...
Oh, I got it. 66.
Yeah, anybody 66 or over. So if they're 73 and say, you know what, I'd like to move into phased retirement, I'll take the year off and then come back, but only for a maximum of 2 years. Phased retirement, currently you can do it for a maximum of 5, right? So this would just be just a shorter window of 2 years. And they would have to take that in 2019. So, and that's every, that should close out everything on the table. Article 19 has already been TA'd.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
We have a caucus room.
Yes.
Oh.
We can go to it.
Yeah. Around the corner.
Okay. If
kind of a lounge place.
That way we'll.
Okay.
come back in when we're...